Ah, we have some friends showing up in our studio right now. This must be Lefty Cray who's walking in. How are you, Lefty? It's good to meet you. And you can sit right across the table from me here. And if we find Ted, there he is out in the hall. Ted Williams will be coming in here in just a second. We'll be set to take some telephone calls. Lefty, while we're waiting for Ted to come on into the studio, see, he's accepted by all his fans out here in the hall. How are you, Ted? Good to see you. You can sit right in this spot of honor here. I see you brought the family along with you tonight. It's good to have you here in Hartford. Lefty, tell me something. The first time you met this fella and took him out fishing or showed him a little bit about the art of fly casting, did you have any idea who Ted Williams was?
Not a whole lot, because I don't do much spectator sports. In fact, I think I told Ted one time that when I pay, I play. I really didn't know a whole lot about I know, of course, I knew Ted Williams' name, but I really didn't know what he did. I didn't know he was a pitcher or a hitter or whatever he was.
Did you teach him a thing or two about your craft?
No, he knows what he's doing.
Is that pretty good out
he's
there?
He's pretty good.
Yeah, he's pretty good at
he's
that,
too.
He's had
a fly rod before.
Kind of burns me up a little bit. He's too good at too many things. Ted, it's good to see you. You look great.
Thank you. I've been to the Red Sox, as you know, for the last 10 days. And I have a chance to come up and follow Lefty's act up here in Hartford. Tough act to follow, for sure.
Well, you look terrific. How do the Red Sox look? I haven't been to camp yet.
Yeah, you know, I heard somebody say the other day that the odds on Detroit were 2-1 or something. The odds on Baltimore, 5-1. The odds on Toronto, 5-1. The odds on Baltimore, 10-1. The odds on the Red Sox, 25-1.
Yep.
I'm not really a betting man on baseball, but I want to tell you something. The Red Sox got a pretty good ball club. And at home, they got one of the best hitting clubs that any club has at home. And if their young pitching comes through, they're going to be a surprise.
How did the young pitching look while you were there?
Well, of course, they haven't played any games yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there's great enthusiasm. Gee, I mean, they walk around like they're world champions. And, I mean, that's a pretty good atmosphere for them to be in.
Ted, how well do you know John McNamara, and what kind of a manager do you think he'll be?
Boy, I'll tell you, I don't know John McNamara at all. But he's a very personable fellow. I'm sure he knows baseball. He's got a great name for that area up there, you know, being an Irishman. I think he's going to do a good job.
He is running a completely different camp from the kind that Ralph Houk ran. I understand Bob Stanley is calling it Camp Winterhaven and so on. They're really working. He's had them out there working very hard. I'm not so sure that's a bad idea.
Well, I want to tell you, any new manager is going to put a lot of new enthusiasm in the club. Just the very fact that he got new things to talk about, a new way of saying it, a new different way of putting a program across. And I think all of these things are conducive to getting people a little bit stirred up. And I think that's exactly what's happening down there.
Yeah. Have you worked with some of the hitters down there so
no,
far?
No, I really haven't. All the hitters that are on the major league side of it are players that I've seen. I'm really just waiting for the younger players, the minor leaguers, to come in.
Yeah.
I work at the second diamond, and I see the Horns and the Greenwalls and the Burgesses and some of the other players that are on the 40-man roster of the Red Sox, but probably won't be with them for the whole year.
We understand Horn has a pretty good shot of coming to the New Britain Red Sox, which is in our neighborhood here, and he hits the ball out of sight from what they tell us.
I want to tell you, I've seen Horn for 2 years, and I think I can praise talent pretty good. And I've never up to this point said, boy, I think Horn's going to do it. Boy, I think he's going to. I'd bet on him. And the last week, Horn has made me think there's no doubt Horn's going to do it. I mean, he showed me a couple things the other day in a workout that showed me made it look as good as anybody could ever make it look. And I'm absolutely go overboard for Sam Horn at this moment. He's a big, strong, young, a lot of zing to him. He's a great kid from San Diego, my hometown. Mm-hmm. Swings a bat with tremendous authority. Hits it further without any question than anybody in our organization. I don't like to say that because he might hear it and say, well, I'll hit him a little further. But all we're trying to do is get him a little more compact, where he's within himself, where he'll be a much better hitter that way than trying to hit him. I told him the other day, I said, you know, Sam, don't try to hit him 490 feet. Just hit him 380, 90, 400 into your pull field. A lot of things are going to happen. And, I mean, I think he's getting that point across.
What a great treat it must be for young players to come in and have the opportunity to work with Ted Williams. I know the way the young Whalers feel when they come in and Gordie Howe gets out on the ice with them. And they've got to feel the same way. And I think perhaps there's a tendency for a young player to listen a little more closely because it's Ted Williams talking to him.
Well, I think the greatest thing that an old player, somebody that has gone through the mill, somebody that might have a little track record, the greatest thing that any old player can do with a young player. And I know I look back 50 years ago when I heard other old players and I might have just heard a hint and say, boy, he was quick. He's quick with his hands. Or doesn't he move into the ball good? And just that little bit of encouragement, and what I'm talking about is confidence, just that little bit of confidence bestowed on a young player can do more than all the instructors, but not that much. But the other day, he showed me things that if I saw that young kid on the field, he ain't a $100,000 project. He's a $500,000
project. I like that. We're going to talk to his agent with you. I think you also sold 5,000 extra tickets for the New Britain Red Sox, which
well,
is good.
Now, this double A here, huh?
That's double A.
Well, that's where he probably is going to play.
Yeah.
And he's going to be exciting. I mean, I'd love to come out on a nice little summer afternoon evening and have a chance to see a Greenwall or a Horn. Or Aquilinus.
He's going to be here also.
Oh,
and
boy,
Marzano,
listen,
the catcher, too.
You're who?
Marzano, the Olympic
yes,
catcher.
Yes, that kid I haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
He signed last year.
Well, Ted,
but for
you're
sure,
welcome. You know, you're invited back.
Okay, all I need is an invite.
And Frank Benateri is in Florida now while you're up here. Can you imagine?
I just saw him yesterday.
Oh, did you really?
Hello to him. Yeah, he's a great guy.
Yeah.
And I've been up to his place here, you know, of course. And he's one of the old standbys down there in spring training.
He's a special guy. Ted Williams is with us, along with Lefty Cray, world-famous fly fisherman. We must take a break here, and then we'll come back. And the phone lines have been busy since Ted Williams walked into the room. So we'll begin your telephone calls in just a moment on WTIC Sports Talk with Arnold Dean.
You're with Arnold Dean, the Dean of Sports. Call 522-0200 to be on WTIC's Sports Talk. WTIC Sports Talk with Arnold Dean moves to Winter Haven, Florida, and features members of the Boston Red Sox beginning Monday at 6:30.
Ted Williams and Lefty Cray are our guests, and as promised, I will start taking some telephone calls now, and good evening. You're on WTIC Sports Talk.
Good evening, Arnold and Lefty, and welcome home, Ted.
Thank you.
Great to have you back in New England again.
Thank you.
Listen, I have a baseball and a fishing question. First, baseball. I wondered if...
This
Ted...
is for Lefty, right? The baseball goes to Lefty.
Whoever feels more qualified, Arnold. I wondered if Ted had any ideas about the increasing lack of production of Jim Rice. He seemed to have three tremendous seasons. I think it was, 76, 77, around there. Since then, his production, especially his power stats, have gone down steadily. For a couple of years, I felt he had a fairly weak hitter batting behind him. But the last 2 years, he's been sandwiched between Evans and Armas, I believe. And I keep waiting for another great year, but they seem to be a thing of the past. Any thoughts?
Well, I can tell you my thoughts on that very easily. The greatest year Jim Rice ever had, the two greatest years Jim Rice ever had, he got up more times than any other single batter in the American League. And that absolutely flabbergasted me because I couldn't believe that anybody as good and as strong and as lethal and as productive and as Jim Rice would be allowed to hit that many times at the plate. Now, there's only one answer to that. Number one, he's swinging at everything that comes up there.
Well, he seems to have improved on that. He seems much more disciplined. In the beginning,
he only walked 54 times last year, which isn't very many.
But don't you feel they're pitching more to him? In the early in his career, he'd be all over the place swinging.
Well, he might be, and he might be making them pitch slightly more, but that still isn't very many walks. Mm-hmm. And when he doesn't get many walks, it makes me believe that I hope the pitchers are smart enough that they would say, well, if he doesn't want to walk, we certainly are not going to give him much to hit. And if he does hit, we're going to give him something extra tough to hit. And I really feel that is one of the reasons that he doesn't even get better than he is. I mean, he's a very strong hitter. He's a strong guy. And he's a productive hitter. I think he should be better. That's just no criticism. I just think he should be better.
Well, it seemed last couple of years everything's hard and on the ground.
Well,
that spells double play.
Well, I know. My theory on hitting, of course, is to get the ball in the air.
Yep.
And some people don't believe in that. And so I can only tell you that I don't like ground balls. You can hit three bullets in the infield.
Exactly.
Ground balls, and you could very well have two away and one man on.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but it sounds like you've told him that, and he doesn't listen.
No, I tell you, Jim Rice is a very intelligent fellow. He really is. But he's had great success.
Yeah.
Somebody asked me the other day, well, what do you think about Rice making $2 million? And as if he was going to get a negative from me, I said, look, the Red Sox are tickled to death with Rice at $2 million, and Rice is tickled to death with the Red Sox with $2 million. I said, geez, what are you arguing about?
Thanks. A fishing question. Arnold, I don't know if any of your listeners know, Ted has co-authored a very exciting book on fishing. They called it The Big Three. It dealt with Atlantic salmon and tarpon, and I forgot the other one. But I was particularly fascinated by the section on tarpon. And I'm planning a trip to Florida in a couple of weeks, and I'm just going to show up in Florida, and I don't know what I'm doing. I'd like to try my hands on it. It sounds like great fun.
Well, I want to tell you, you're right about the book. I think I really think it's an exciting book.
It is.
But I'm sitting across from one of the truly great angling writers and anglers that I've ever known, and I'm going to relay that question on to him a little bit and let him take the ball.
I thought he was a freshwater fisherman.
No, I do some more saltwater and freshwater probably, but if you were going to go to saltwater fishing, I would not go fishing without a guide.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. No matter how good you are, and I'd like Ted to comment on that, but No matter how good you are, when you go to saltwater, particularly the Keys-type fishing, it is so much more skillful and requires so many more demands.
It sounds like it.
To be a really good saltwater fly fisherman, you have to be two or three times better saltwater fisherman than you do in freshwater.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, I think that's right, Lefty, for sure. You know, I've lived down there all my life, and when I fish a lot, I see a lot more fish because I know the area they're in. I know where I didn't see them yesterday, so I'm going to another place.
Tides are different.
And right. And a good guide is pretty much up on it all the time. And as good as you think you can see fish, a guide can see them two to three times better.
Sure
Their range is so much bigger.
Are you talking a private guide, or are there charters?
A professional guide in the Keys.
Professional guide. Professional guides will cost you $225 to $250 a day, but they'll be worth it. You'd be better off to go one day with a guide and 10 days by yourself.
Yeah, sounds that way.
Wow.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for your call.
Arnold, good luck in Florida.
Thank you very much.
All right, bye-bye.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. That's excellent advice, Lefty. I think you put it very well when you say better to have the guide one day than to go 10 days on your own.
Well,
if you're going to do it, it's not an inexpensive thing to do anyway. You better do it right.
Well, the unfortunate thing that most people don't realize, there's so many. If you fish for trout, you fish for trout differently, you fish for bass. You fish for bass differently, you do pike. You fish for bass pike differently, you do carp. When you go bonefish and you fish for bonefish differently, you do tarpon. And you fish for darpon differently, you do amberjack, and so on down. And people don't realize that. They think, well, I go saltwater fishing, I'm going to go saltwater fishing.
Yeah.
You really need a guide the first few trips.
The Keys, that's one of your favorite spots, isn't it, Ted?
Well, it ought to be. I've lived down there 35 years.
Yeah. Better be.
And the reason I went down there is because of the tarpon and the bonefish.
I think it's one of your favorite spots. Ted Williams and Lefty Cray are our guests here tonight on WTIC Sports Talk with Arnold Dean.
Dial 522-0200 now, and you'll be with Arnold Dean on WTIC Sports Talk. Pitcher Al Nipper at 6:30. General Manager Lou Gorman at 7:05. As the Red Sox are featured live from Spring Training Monday on WTIC Sports Talk with Arnold Dean.
And back we go to our conversation with Ted Williams and Lefty Cray. Good evening. You're on WTIC Sports Talk.
Hello, Arnold. It's a real treat tonight to have number 9 in your studio, I know, for you as well as
the
listeners.
You're telling me.
Ted, I just want you to know it's a real thrill to have you here in New England, and certainly you are the world's greatest hitter. There has been no one like you since you retired that can generate the kind of excitement throughout a ballpark that you did, even when you weren't even playing. For example, I recall being in Fenway Park when you were in the dugout and the late innings would come up, and the crowd around the 7th or 8th inning when the Red Sox really needed a run could just kind of sense the anticipation of having you come up those steps. And I want to tell you, as soon as you started out of that dugout, the crowd would just have an air of excitement that can't be explained. And there's no one in baseball who's been able to do that since you retired. But the one question I have for you, Ted, is this. With today's ball player, it appears that the averages aren't what they used to be. And I wondered if you feel there might be a little bit of lack of concentration based on the increased salaries and also the advent of the designated hitter.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you for the kind words. I mean, you make you feel an old ball player. I mean, you make me feel like something special, and a lot of it was worthwhile.
Oh, you were, Ted.
Yeah, well, thank you. I think it's awful easy today to criticize the modern player. I want to give you a little example. I thought about this 40 years. More than 40 years, 45 years of my life. I was in Minneapolis in 1938, and I was with Rogers Hornsby, the greatest right-hand hitter that ever lived. And he was an old coach with the Minneapolis Millers. He's only 45 then. And I was a young ball player with Minneapolis. And I was trying to listen to every word Roger Hornsby said. And that year, there was a young fella in New York who had a tremendous season. His name was Joe DiMaggio. And he was holding out for $25,000. And he'd led the league in everything. A tremendous year. And led the Yankees to the pennant. And he was holding out all during the spring. And I remember hearing Rogers Hornsby say, "I wonder who in the hell he thinks he is." Well, I always, from that day on, looking back, I always said, boy, I'm not going to be a criticizer of the young players, of the modern players. There's a lot of good, outstanding players today. I'm the one that said that I thought hitting a baseball was the hardest single thing to do in sports, and I still think that. And if it is, it means that you have to have more opportunity to play. It means that you have to have more hours to do it. To get the final result of with talent, opportunity, dedication, everything that's involved to getting the end product. And I think it's a little harder to do that today. I really think it's a little harder to do that today. And as a result, I don't say this in any criticism, but I think you don't see quite as many good hitters today, I honestly believe that, as you used to see 30 and 40 years ago.
Do you think, though, Ted, that that's because of the designated hitter and the fact that the pitchers aren't staying in as long as they used to?
What's the latter part?
The pitchers aren't staying in ball games as long as they used to. Therefore, the batters, you know, when it came down to a very close ball game and you had a good hitting pitcher, chances are that pitcher would stay in the game and not be removed.
I'm not so sure that that wasn't a little easier to hit by,
right,
hitting at that same pitcher again. I'm not sure you're right there. I mean, not sure you're not right there.
Yeah.
But when you go a step further and you say that there was 16 major league clubs in professional baseball then, and I don't know how many there are now, really.
Uh-huh. 26.
But 26. That talent's been spread out, even though the population and everything might match up to that expansion, that there should be advantages for a good hitter to make it easier for himself by not hitting at all a good pitcher as many times.
Right.
And it should be easier. Now, I say the same thing for the good pitcher, that the good pitcher doesn't have to hit the face the real good hitters as often, and it ought to be easier for him.
Correct. Well, Ted, thank you for your time, and most of all, thank you for so many wonderful memories.
Thank you. All right. Thank you
good
very
night.
Much.
Thanks for your call.
Right.
Ted, I remember watching you at Fenway Park when they put the Williams shift on, and I remember that I think you had a streak in you that said, I'm not going to stand for this, and you hit the ball on the ground and threw that tightened up infield twice one day when I was there.
Well, that's a pretty hard thing for me to do because
yes,
it kind of changed my style a little bit, and it was hard to do, and I'm not sure that I did all that great a job, but enough that I broke up that a little bit to where they had to open up a little bit. And, I lost an awful lot of hits, you know, for a while there. And, in fact, this same Roger Hornsby, and I loved him. I thought he was a super guy. He treated me just absolutely great. This same Roger Hornsby said in 1946, he says, it's the end of Williams. He'll never be a big hitter anymore. Now, he said that. But, you know, he was one of those outspoken guys. But a good hitter has got to make adjustments. A good hitter has to hit according to the wind, the pitcher, the count, the ball game, what's happened in past series, a lot of things. And the good hitter will do it.
That was one of the things about you. I think your concentration was almost fearful when you were thinking of hitting the baseball, that you were absolutely consumed by hitting the baseball.
Well, I'd have to think you're awful close because I can't think of too many things I was thinking of except hitting the ball when I was at the plate. Yeah,
that's right.
What did you learn from Lefty Cray? Tell me, what questions did you ask Lefty the first time
Lefty
you met him?
Lefty Cray has been one of the great angling writers in the last 20 years. He's a great fisherman, been around, he's done a lot of things, and I told him tonight, I said that he has taken from where Joe Brooks left off, the great fisherman Joe Brooks, great fly fisherman, and he was a great writer too. And Lefty has adapted the same style, fished the same type, the same type of fisherman, and I get a kick out of reading his stuff because I pretty near can reminisce about Joe Brooks when I read his stuff.
Lefty, what kind of questions do you get here at the fishing show? What do people want to know most? They can't ask you your favorite fishing holes. I don't think that they're all available
no,
to go there.
I just got back from Christmas Island. Most people are interested in how to cast better more than anything else because, after all, if you're fly casting, delivering the fly to the fish is the first job you got to do. But then there are lots of people. I had questions a day on night fishing for freshwater trout. I had fellows that are going to bone fishing and want to know how to catch bonefish. I got a guy that's going next week for tarpon. He wanted to know how to go for tarpon. I guess there really isn't any one single question, although Ted wanted to know all my best spots.
Well, you know, this is an interesting thing, though, with Lefty. Lefty gets a chance to go to some of the greatest places to fish in the world. You know, he's a writer, and, you know, he gets contacts, and they want to go fishing with him and all the rest. But he doesn't expound on his recent trip to the Christmas Islands. Not many people know where the Christmas Islands are. They're down south of Hawaii, 1,500 miles. It's the latest hot spot for bonefish. And, you know, Lefty, you ought to tell him a little bit about the Christmas Islands.
Well, Ted and I have fished probably as much bonefish as most people, and to me, the bonefish is the greatest fish of all. It's the wild turkey of hunting, I think. In wild turkey hunting, you've got to do everything quite right, you know, and you use light tackle, and the fish is very wary and sees you quickly. Same sort of thing. You don't have to use big tackle and that sort of thing. And years ago, you used to see thousands of bonefish in the Yucatan area, but they've been pretty well netted out. And there's some good place in the Bahamas. But the Christmas Island area is 1,300 miles south of Honolulu. It's the largest atoll in the world. It's almost 100 miles in circumference. The entire inside of that thing is full of bonefish, which is really one of the most difficult fish to catch. And a good fisherman like Ted should catch 30 or 40 bonefish a day there. And a good fisherman like Ted will catch 4 or 5 in the Florida Keys. So you're getting a comparison of what, if anybody wants to do bonefish, and that's the place to go. What is also interesting is that, and I was telling Ted at dinner, that there is a great deal of other fishing that has not been written about there, which I intend to write about later. There's all sorts of offshore fishing. We caught a pickup truck load of wahoo in 2.5 hours there just the other day. Mm-hmm. Marvelous people. The bird life is so tame that you can pick a bird up off the nest with your hands and fondle its egg, put the egg back, and put the bird back on the nest. Mm-hmm. They have no fear of human beings at all. Fabulous place.
Sounds like heaven. We are talking with Lefty Cray and Ted Williams. It's 20 before 8. We must take another quick break here. You are listening to WTIC Sports Talk with Arnold Dean.
Now's your chance to talk to Arnold Dean at 522-0200 on WTIC Sports Talk.
Coming up, skies will clear tonight, and it will become rather chilly, the low temperature 32. Tomorrow and Sunday will be mostly sunny with an active breeze, high temperatures both days near or just above 50. I'm John Cosette, WTIC AccuWeather.
And the temperature in downtown Hartford is 49.
The Red Sox play the Tigers, Mets, and Yankees during the next week in Winter Haven, Florida. And Arnold Dean will be there to report nightly, beginning Monday on WTIC.
Lefty Cray and Ted Williams are our guests, and we're going to have to let Lefty Cray go because you are going to be on stage here over at the fishing show in a few minutes, aren't you?
Yeah, got to do a casting demonstration.
What have they set up for you?
They have a long water tank, and I used to do a lot of trick casting. I don't do that anymore. Yeah. I just show a lot of things that you can do with a fly rod to help you catch fish and have more fun.
Can anybody do it, Lefty?
Oh, sure. And the difference between a fishing rod and a fishing pole, Arnold, is $200.
The real difference is God. The real difference is God makes fishing poles. I'll see y'all
absolutely
later.
Thank you so much, Lefty. It's great to see you. Yeah. And that's Lefty Cray, who is certainly one of the great ones. Let's take another telephone call for Ted Williams. Good evening. You're on WTIC Sports Talk.
I'd love to say hello to Ted if I could, Arnold.
You got him.
Ted, it's a real pleasure to have you. I'm a Yankee fan from the Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, and Joe DiMaggio, but as I mellowed and got older, I realized there are other people in baseball besides the Yankees, and Ted Williams was surely a credit to the game. Looking at your record, you said you were in Minneapolis in 1938. In 1939, you came up to the Red Sox. You only hit .327. It's really something, and we're quite thrilled to have you back helping those Red Sox.
Well, I appreciate those kind words. You know, as you mentioned, of course, Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, Joe DiMaggio. I was just looking at a picture here, and it was Joe DiMaggio and Mickey Mantle. And Mickey Mantle was one of the greatest players that ever lived. There's no question.
Ted, do you recall batting against one of our Connecticut boys, Frank Shea, in the 47?
Boy, do I. I guess so. And I tell you, he got me out good the first year. And he's such a great guy. Frank Shea is such a great guy. But he got me out awfully good. Oh, sure he is, sure.
You are very modest.
But he's one of those Irishmen, you know. He got me out that first year, and he very popular, and the Yankees won. I saw him pitch the opening game of the World Series that year, and I've always kidded him about this, and really I admire him. He was on the banquet tour all fall, all winter. And he spoke with good reasoning, because he got me out better than he got out Bobby Doerr that year. And he used to say, boy, I'd rather pitch to Bobby Doerr than I would Ted Williams.
Teddy, I'll tell you something.
Or Ted Williams rather than Bobby Doerr.
It's baseball's loss. We don't have more splendors
back. Well, you're nice to say that. Thank you very much, buddy. Thank you.
You were mentioning Mantle, and you started to say something about Joe D, too, Ted.
Well, Joe DiMaggio, I played against him probably longer than any other player. in our league, and I thought he was the greatest player I saw in our league. And he's been a tremendous credit to the game, a tremendous credit to himself. I love the DiMaggio family. I played with Dominic. I played with his brother Vince in the Coast League. I can't have more admiration for the whole outfit.
I just saw Joe again a month or so ago at the Baseball Writers Dinner in New York, and gee, he looks
tremendous. Oh, sure. Too. He's thin. I don't know. He doesn't eat, I guess. A lot of lettuce or something.
Hi, you're on WTIC Sports Talk with Ted Williams.
Hi. My father was a great Irishman from the Boston area, and often he would say to me, you know, don't forget that Ted Williams, great as he is and was and will always be, he was in the service for many years or a number of years, and I've always wondered, how did the service affect all aspects of your baseball career, Ted?
Well, you know, I always felt that I was pretty lucky because when I went into service in 43, and I was there 3 years, and I came out in 46, I really didn't even know that I'd been out a year. I got going right away. In fact, 46 was one of my better years. But some of the fellows had a harder time. I think Joe DiMaggio was one of them. And Greenberg had lost 4 years. 4 years, and truly one of the greatest players I ever played with. And them 4 years took an awful lot out of Greenberg. In fact, it was towards his 30th year, 33, 34 years, and it just happened to be at the right time where it had the more effect on him probably than anybody.
All right. Thanks very much, Ted.
Yep.
Thank you for your call. You're on WTIC Sports Talk.
Yes, I'd like to speak with Ted Williams, please.
You got him.
Hello, Ted.
Yes, sir.
You know, you keep speaking about all the Irish kids and all the Irishmen. Well, I tell you, I'm an Italian kid that had to suffer through a lot of grief from all the Italians that were Joe D and Yankee fans, because I was a Williams and Red Sox fan ever since I put on a glove. And so it's not just the Irishmen that care for you, let me tell you.
Well, I appreciate that. I want to tell you, you know, it's pretty hard to buck the trend down there. You had Yogi Berra, and you had Phil Rizzuto, and you had Joe DiMaggio.
Tell me about it.
Before that, it was the Lazzari and Crosetti.
Well, coming from the south end of Hartford, you know, I took a lot of grief because I got a lot of ribbing being a Red Sox fan.
I bet.
You know, I want to ask you, are you wearing a tie for the Arnold Dean show, Ted?
I got a tie on here now, buddy. You wouldn't believe
it. I don't believe it.
I'm not kidding you. It's beautiful.
You know, I want to get your thought on the DH rule, Ted.
All right. You know, when the DH rule first came out, I thought it was a pretty good thing.
Yeah.
The last 10 years, I've thought it was a lousy thing.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to see him. I personally would like to see him forget about it.
Good.
For a couple of reasons. Number one is, I think it'd make managing a little bit more to the fan's liking, where the fan might have a little bit more to think about
sure.
in the stands and to match his, what the manager's going to do. The manager really doesn't have that much to do right now because he can lay back and he can just keep the pitcher in, or he doesn't have to make a decision in the seventh, eighth, and ninth
exactly.
innings.
Exactly.
Whether or not he has to take this pitcher out and take a chance on a hitter. And I think in the long run it would be a better game without the designated
hitter. Absolutely. I'm glad you said that. If they had the DH when you were phasing out your career, would you have stayed on?
Well, as a matter of fact, I would not have, because I was to the point when I quit that I was fed up with it. I'd had it. I knew I couldn't do it as well anymore. And nothing would have changed my mind. As a matter of fact, a lot of people don't know this, but in 1960, I quit. In 1961, I was offered, or I was asked, the permission was asked to ask me if I would go to the New York Yankees to become a pinch hitter for the 1961 season for the same salary I was getting for the Red Sox as a player. And I wasn't even interested.
You know, the salary that you mentioned now, The ball players today are commanding really, really big money. But as I recall, you were one of the first ball players to get $100,000. Am I correct there?
That's right.
Sure.
That's right.
But not that you didn't deserve it. But now look at how in those days $100,000 was a lot of money.
Well,
but now it's really gone out of proportion, though. You know, you're talking
to some people. It's not too bad today.
No. Well, you see, the traffic will bear it. Television is making it all possible.
That's right.
And so I think that you'd be silly to say, well, or to deny the player that's capable of demanding that and getting it, more power to him as far as I'm concerned.
Well, listen, I'm glad I had the pleasure to talk to you, and I just wanted to mention one thing. You know, you really didn't get enough credit for you were quite a showman, you know. Your gestures in left field, I'll never forget. You kept not only the suspension in the air for the fans when it was the seventh and eighth inning time, but you had a few, I can recall.
I know what you mean, and it cost me money, too.
Thank you for your call.
All right, thanks, Ted.
Bye-bye. You were mentioning, you mentioned Phil Rizzuto's name a little while ago. They just took Country Slaughter and Archie Vaughn into the Hall of Fame and bypassed Rizzuto again. What do you think, Ted? You're outspoken.
I think he's awful close. He was a hell of a player. He was one of the three, four best infielders that I ever saw in the big leagues. I still, as I look back, can't believe that a little guy like him could do the things that he did. And I want to tell you something. And this happened in 49 or 50, and the great DiMaggio was still with the Yankees. And I had one of their players tell me, and this is no reflection on anybody, but said, you know who the most valuable player on this club is? It's that little guy at shortstop. He was a hell of a player, no question about it.
If Ted Williams had a vote, Phil Rizzuto would be in.
In the old-timers committee, I think so, yeah.
Ted Williams is our guest.
I think there's other players, too. And I think there's other players, but I think Phil Rizzuto, boy, I'll tell you, he was a terrific little player.
Yeah. Ted Williams is our guest. It is 8 before 8. You're listening to WTIC Sports Talk with Arnold Dean.
Dial 522-0200 right now to talk with Arnold Dean on WTIC Sports Talk.
Welcome back to Clayton Motors, Mr. Howard.
Hi.
How's your new Dodge pickup doing?
Oh, great.
Any problems?
No, of course not. You folks gave me so much time to make up my mind, I got just the pickup I wanted.
Good.
And with Dodge's 5-year, 50,000-mile guarantee, how can anything be wrong?
So you're just here to say hi.
Well, actually,
yes?
I'd like to move in now, if that's all right.
Hmm?
To Clayton Motors, I'd like to live here.
You're serious?
Yeah. I figure my water bed will fit fine in the showroom. Most of my stuff's out in the truck, stereo, coffee table, couch, color TV.
You want to live?
Clayton Motors, yeah. You folks are so friendly here, so relaxed. I went home, but it just wasn't the same.
No, but Mr.
Your sales staff can teach me all kinds of stuff about trucks. I'll be close to your great service department.
We don't
and you have coffee here and cookies. And anyway, I already sold my house.
I don't know what to say. I mean, we're not set up for this kind of thing.
Oh.
Besides, won't you be lonely at night? There's no one else around.
Lonely? A man with a wife and seven kids?
Seven?
Billy, Jimmy, Robert, Susie, give me your hand.
Clayton Motors, the comfortable car store. Burnside Avenue in East Hartford.
Sometimes the whole world narrows down to just two people. That's when it's nice to brush your breath with Dentine.
Do you believe these lift lines? It's a wonder anybody gets to ski.
We could try some cross-country skiing.
Being together is even nicer with Dentine because not even mouthwash can freshen your breath better than when you're chewing lively, long-lasting Dentine.
When the whole wide world for you narrows down to just you two.
With cross-country, how do you know when you're finished?
Brush your breath with Dentine.
Dressing warmly protects you from winter's big chill. But did you know that eating wisely also helps you resist wintertime illness? Make sure you eat enough food for the energy you need to stay warm. Eat something for breakfast. Include at least 4 servings a day of fruit and fruit juices and dark green or orange vegetables for important vitamins and minerals. Drink plenty of liquids to help offset the effects of dry indoor heat. This is Linda Gacoin, nutritionist with the Yukon Cooperative Extension Service working with WTIC for a better Connecticut.
March is the month for basketball, hockey, and baseball. And you'll hear top guests representing each sport nightly on WTIC Sports Talk with Arnold Dean.
The fishing show at the Hartford Civic Center is on from 10 till 10 tomorrow, but you can see Ted Williams at 1, 3, and 8 p.m. And I guarantee when you go there, you won't be by yourself. This is probably the last call we'll have time for. Good evening. You're on WTIC Sports Talk.
Oh, good evening, Arnold. I can't believe I got on. I can't think of anybody else that's made me stop my car in the middle of a cold night and run over to a phone booth and dial for a half an hour. I don't have any question to ask Ted, but I just wanted to take the opportunity to thank him for all the great thrills he gave me when I was a kid. You know, when I was growing up, there were two things. You went to the movies and saw John Wayne, or you listened to the radio and heard Ted Williams bat. And to me, that was my whole life when I was a kid. And God, he gave me so great many thrills. I just wanted to call up and thank him.
You're a nice guy, and I appreciate those nice words.
Oh, really. Ted, you're wonderful. Believe me.
Thank you very much.
You know, they're talking about money. I've got an article hanging on the wall in my office, and it says, today, Ted Williams will get $50 million. If it had my way, I tell you, I just can't express how great it was when I was a kid. Just once in a while, I get an opportunity to go up and see Ted play or listen to him all summer long on the radio. I just want to thank you for all the great moments you gave me, Ted. You're
thank
a great
you
guy.
Thanks
much.
For your call.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. 4 before 8. Ted, just a couple more questions before we let you go, and I know that you've been on kind of a grueling schedule. Yep. And you need some rest here. Your son looks great, by the way.
Well, you know, he went through quite a little experience in the summer. He got burned kind of bad, which is certainly a painful experience for anybody. But I'm quite proud of him. He's going to a nice little school. He's making pretty good grades, and he's a joy right now in my life, I can tell you that.
How old is he? 16?
Oh, he's 16, yeah. He's a big string bean. Christ, he's a, you know, I was... When I first signed my first contract in baseball, I was just 17. I was 6'3¾", and I weighed 147 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, can't believe it.
I think Frank has a picture of you from that time in his restaurant,
Sure he does.
I remember one time I interviewed you at the batting cage at Winter Haven, and one of the things I said was, there are a lot of kids listening, and they're getting ready now for spring for Little League and so on. I said, now, they're not old enough to read your book, which I think anybody should do. Anybody who wants to is interested in hitting a baseball should read Ted Williams' book. And I say that now as I did then. But would you give them a hint on the air, which you did. A little while later, you got George Scott there, and he said he had never read the book and so on. You called me back over and had me replay that thing from the tape. Your book still sells, doesn't it?
Well, you can't get it anymore. Science of Hitting has been reprinted several times, but it'll take something to get it stirred up again. But invariably, I'm asked to find out where I can get it, and I don't know where I can tell you to get it.
It's a document, really.
So, yeah.
Good hitters, I think, still refer to it.
I can't believe, and it hurts me, not because I didn't sell the book, but it hurts me to have a young player today, and a professional player particularly, say, no, I never read it.
Mm.
And I mean, if I was a young player today and I'd have had a book by, I don't care, any of the old players that had had some success and it proved that they knew how to hit, and I hadn't looked at that book, I'd feel like I'd been really gypped out of something. Yeah. And I can't believe that a young player who's really interested in this game wouldn't want to get it.
Al Nipper, as you know, has every book ever written on pitching.
Yeah.
And Al Nipper has probably less talent than any other Red Sox
pitcher.
Well,
by the way, he's feeling pretty good.
Yes.
And he's doing pretty good. He looked good the other day, and he said he's getting stronger every day.
That's right. And he knows the art.
Kid.
Yes, sir. Yeah, he played here in New Britain also.
Yeah, you bet.
One last question, Ted. That advice for the kids in the final minute. What should they do to improve their hitting?
Well, it all depends on the age bracket you're talking about. But let's say 12 years old should get a bat, and he should swing it and swing it and swing it and swing it in a different strike zone, strike area every time he swings it. And the big thing is he has to be quick, and he has to get hips ahead of hands. Quickness, hips ahead of hands. Don't swing down.
Contrary to what some batting coaches will tell you in major league camps. Ted, thanks a million. I'll see you in Winter Haven next week. Thank you, George Gonzalez. And we really appreciate that. This has been a joy. And Ted Williams was our very special guest tonight on WTIC Sports Talk with Arnold Dean. We've enjoyed it and hope you have too. We'll be talking to you all next week from Winter Haven, Florida. This Al Nipper, the pitcher we were just talking about, will be our first guest at 6:30. Lou Gorman, the general manager of the Red Sox, at 7:05 come Monday night. You'll have a chance to talk with them live from spring training.
Been listening to New England's number one sports program on New England's sports leader, WTIC Sports Talk with Arnold Dean. Stay tuned for Mark Davis and more telephone talk following WTIC 1080 News next on WTIC 1080 Hartford, celebrating 60 years as the pulse of New England.